Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is that time of year again when hockey becomes the foremost thing we all... Wait, hold on. I'm being told that it's March Madness starts this week. Okay, fine. We're not a March Madness podcast, so we're going to focus on hockey. Here on Biscuits, a hockey podcast, I am Dave Lozo. I am in Brooklyn, where it's snowing a little bit, and therefore the entire city of New York is shut down to the point where it feels like you can't get around without some sort of... bribery to like a cop who can take you to like an underground tunnel to get you from Manhattan to Brooklyn, because God forbid the MTA operate normally when it snows. But that's it for my part of the intro. Sorry.
And this is Sean. I'm in Ottawa. It's snowing right now. We've had like 4 or 5 inches and nobody cares.
Right.
It's changed.
Nobody cares.
Absolutely nothing.
It's just like a normal day.
Yeah. Your people are driving full speed in school loading zones. Nobody cares. It's all good.
Like, people can't even walk in Manhattan when it snows. Like, I'm behind like two people who are like just like walking on an uncovered, there's no snow on the sidewalk, and they're just like shuffling along like real slow.
You guys get snow like for 8 months. How are you not used to it? Like, I understand when like South Carolina gets a dusting and they all freak out, but you guys, I think, get more snow than we do. Like,
we're soft. We're so soft, man. Oh, by the way, speaking of snow and ice, I don't think we talked about this last week, but apparently you, Tessa, and Scott are like BFF post-Olympics now. I think I might have read that somewhere on the internet.
That's right. Yeah. This is I tweeted, well, Bruce Arthur tweeted something about building statues to Tessa and Scott. They're the ice dancers who may or may not be more than just ice dancers.
Might just be friends or more.
For Canada. And he tweeted a joke about building statues, and I tweeted back a joke, which is weird because I tweeted it just to reply to him saying that, yeah, we should put the statues one at each end of the country, and then we could all stand between them and feel the warm glow of love and affection for the first time in our entire lives. And the tweet just took off. It went crazy. And I guess somebody actually at their Olympic press conference read the tweet to them.
No, that's what it was? Oh my God.
I think it was at the press conference. It may have been like on a, but it was somebody British. That was how crazy it was.
That's even better. Jolly good show, Scott.
Yeah. Scott was like, how can I get your response to this? And she, and she said like, oh, that's, cause I think like it was sort of stripped out of the context of it coming from a like sarcastic hockey blogger who can't, you know, communicate with genuine, he just, everything is sarcastic and embittered, and it, you know, it was stripped out of that. So she was like, oh, that's so lovely. And then she said something about, I would love to meet the person who tweeted that. And then Scott jumped in,
it's like, whoa,
and said,
whoa, whoa,
you know,
hang
I tweeted
on.
It. He was trying to take credit, which normally, there's nothing that annoys me. There's very little that annoys me more on Twitter than people who steal your jokes and take credit for them.
Yeah.
But I feel like this is the one exception. Like if that's what does it, if that's what finally brings these two crazy kids together, then he can have the tweet.
It's like high school where like she likes him, but he's reticent. So she uses you to make him jealous, and then they get together and you're just like Ducky from that 80s movie that 80s people like pretty
yeah,
in Pink.
I'll take Ducky for this one. I'd be in that, like if I can be what brings these two together, I'll get my face on like a Canadian bill.
I love how like you're kind of like me, probably not to the same extent, but you're sarcastic on Twitter. You haven't had a real emotion or feeling in a real long time, much like me. And yet when you do your sarcastic tweet, everyone strips out the sarcasm, and it becomes this beautiful message of love for Canada's sweethearts. And when I do it, when I say, who cares about Alex Ovechkin's 600 goals because Jonathan Toews and Sidney Crosby have just one goal, and that's winning a Stanley Cup. Everyone takes that seriously. No one sees the joke in those tweets. And then I'm
very angry.
Just
every time,
it's great.
About once a week, you tweet something, and I see it, and I go, this is the tweet that Dave has made it so obvious that he's joking that nobody will be able to misinterpret this.
Nobody will bite.
And either get mad or think that Vince Scully really said it, or it went, or think this is a real movie script or whatever it is.
Yep.
And I'm always, every single time, Twitter comes through with.
That's right. I did a Shape of Water script where like the whole joke was just like fish sex, and somebody was like, "Is this real?" Yes, this is really what it was. But I'm like you, where I think Alex Ovechkin's fantastic. I think 600 goals in this day and age is as good as 700 or 800 back in a day when goaltenders didn't know how to stand up on their 2 feet for more than 4 minutes without falling down. I think it's fantastic. I don't blame Alex Ovechkin for, you know, his team not being able to ever get out of the second round, because he has really good playoff numbers. He just runs into, you know, Crosby. He runs into Lundqvist. He runs into Nick Backstrom feeling like a series is over when he's down 3-1 and he gives up mentally. That's not his fault. So it's a pretty cool milestone. And it's kind of funny how during the game last night too, which I thought was kind of weird, because like in baseball, if a guy hits 500 home runs, like everyone comes out of the dugout, they're all like, hey, buddy, nice job. And he scored 600 and they were just kind of like, eh.
Yeah. I wrote a thing about this a few weeks ago, because like we stopped doing that at some point. There was
Brett Hull we did it for, right? I remember Brett Hull getting a number, and we did it.
Somebody set a record or a milestone, like we stopped the game. It was the Timu Solani when he broke Mike Bossy's record for goals by a rookie, which was that's a single season record. That's not even a career milestone. They emptied the bench and stopped the game to present him with like a golden stick. And we don't really do, like, I feel like when one of the Sedins got his 1,000th point, like, I think they may have emptied the bench for that, but they don't, they certainly don't. We don't do like the make the owner come out and like give the guy a plaque. And Gary Bett, the best ever was, and you know, obviously this was a huge milestone, but when Gretzky set the scoring record and like Gary Bettman came out and gave him a scrapbook.
I don't remember that at all. When he passed Howe in points, or when he scored the 800 and whatever goal?
I want to say it was the points.
Yeah, that's a big one.
And I can't even remember if it was the record, if he, like, it was when he hit the 2,000 milestone, but it was something, and like Bettman was brand new as commissioner and he came out and he's like, and we have a special gift, and like everyone's like looking past him to like see like the car that's going to drive out or whatever. And Bettman pulls out like basically a scrapbook of like newspaper articles about Wayne Gretzky. And Gretzky's looking at him like, dude, like my mom already has one of these. It's just a classic moment. I think it's still on YouTube. I hope it was a few years ago, but yeah, I think we need to bring back everybody pour off the bench, stop the game, make the other team sit there for 10 minutes,
right?
A little ceremony.
And like the Winnipeg Jets, they all knew what it was. They have the internet. They know how many goals Ovechkin has. And when he scored the 600th, they kind of like gave him a few minutes or a few seconds at least to kind of wave to the crowd and all that. So like they were prepared for something. Yeah. And the Caps were just like, it's only 2-1.
Clear sign that they don't like and respect him.
Hate him.
He's a bad captain.
Bad defense.
This is why he doesn't win.
Drifter doesn't skate hard in his own zone. That's what it is. That's the clear and obvious take that I get from this, is they should trade Alex Ovechkin after the season because he's not a winner. I mean, look, who would you rather have, Alex Ovechkin or Trevor Lewis? I mean, who's your guy?
Who's got the rings?
Oh my God, do you think he gets do you think he actually gets to Gretzky's number? Everyone thinks he does. I think he's kind of having a fluky season, but
to Gretzky. Yeah. I don't,
like, he'll get the 700. Yeah,
it's not fluky season, and he's like, his style, like, he's you know, he's not a guy who scores based on like speed and I know if I say athleticism, it's, you know, like it's like you could see him aging well because it's the hockey sense and the shot. And in theory that shouldn't fade. So, but I mean, he's got a long way to go. I mean, 200 more goals to get to, what did Gretzky finish with? Eight, like high 800s, right? So he's got almost 300 goals to go.
Was it 879? I want to say.
Yeah. I don't think, I'm thinking 802, but that was how, that was breaking Howe's record. And then he kept going. Yeah, it's going to be a question. How high does he get that? And then even if you adjust for era, he could finish second there too, to Howe, which is really an unfair comparison because Howe played for forever. So it's amazing. Like I'm very willing to accept arguments that he's the greatest goal scorer ever. Like I don't know for sure whether I believe that's true, but I don't think it's at all an outrageous case to try to make.
Like, I am all for Alex Ovechkin preventing the aging process by just, you know, just drowning himself in meldonium, whatever he's got to get, you know, just let him keep scoring. I don't care anymore. I've lost the ability to get on the pulpit and be like, no, I don't care. Like hit 110 home runs in a season, score 90 goals when you're 42. I don't care anymore. I'm beaten down by the last 2 years in America where nothing matters anymore. So I think that should just translate over to hockey. Let him and Nick Backstrom just fill up on like steroids, like the Kevin Nealon steroid Olympics from the old SNL sketch. Like, just have him and Backstrom play till they're 50. I don't care.
Russians can do whatever they want. Yeah. So he'll be up there. Where? Let me ask you this. Last year I read an excellent book that ranked the top 100 players.
Oh, who was it about? Who wrote it?
It was like an ebook. And it was fantastic. I believe it's still on Amazon. I think if you search 100 best NHL players,
interesting.
I would recommend it. I'll look that up. Fantastic gift.
It's got to be a book written by like three people because like one person couldn't just
It was three fantastic writers got together. Anyways,
okay.
They had Ovechkin 17. Do you move him up at this point?
Do you happen to remember who those guys said were like 14, 15, and 16?
Yeah, let me just pull it up because for some strange reason, I have their master list saved on my computer.
Well, that's good.
Let me give you the names I had. Here's the names we had ahead of Alexander Ovechkin.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they had Jacques Plante, 16. Mm-hmm. Eddie Shore, 15. Sidney Crosby, 14. Patrick Roy, 13.
Yeah.
Beliveau and Hasek. And then you get into the top 10.
Yeah, like you're like, I mean, like, I don't know if I would put him ahead of Crosby. I wouldn't put him ahead of Crosby, so there's no there. And then it's, you know, like, how do you it's hard to compare Ovechkin to a goalie from like the Harry Truman era, you know? Like, it's just, I don't know.
That's
if I move
it.
Him
like,
up.
It's one of those things where you hear 17, you go, well, he's got to be higher.
Yeah.
But then you look at who's like the forwards ahead of him are Crosby, Beliveau, Esposito, Bobby Hull. And then Richard, Lemieux, Howe, Gretzky. Like, I don't push him ahead of any of those guys. We already had him ahead of Bossy. Had him ahead of Jagr.
Boy, I think it sounds like you're telling me that this list that these people did has aged extremely well. And it still is relevant today.
But there's one, you know, the one thing that I didn't like about it, it has this guy that, this Evgeny Malkin guy.
Heard of him.
Is on the list.
Oh,
where
really?
You know, according to the NHL, he's not like they have him like in the 50s, and according to the NHL, he's not even top 100. So
that's fucking god.
Malkin in the MVP race now? I keep having people try to make the case that he's now the front runner, and I feel like he wasn't even in the race a week ago.
I
so
know
this...
because he's now closer to the, that's all people do is they look at who has the most points, and then they just assume. Like I saw a tweet that said something like in his last. I'll get the numbers wrong, but like in his last 28 games, he has like 45 points. And in Taylor Hall's last 28 games, he has like 37 points. And the tweet's like, well, who's the MVP? Well, let's see who Evgeny Malkin plays with on the power play and at 5-on-5 and who Taylor Hall plays with. And then compare what 7 points over 28 games means in terms of the difference. Like, I just, you know what? I get it. You don't want to punish guys for playing with great players, but That's why they have the Ted Lindsay. That's why there's two different awards. This whole thing where it's like, why don't we just change the MVP to the best player? We have that.
We have two different awards because one is for the players to vote on and one's for the media. But they're not meant to be.
But they're different awards, though.
They have different wording to them.
Yeah. Most valuable player to his team.
My thing with Malkin is, like, I seem to remember the first half of the season, people were talking that Phil Kessel should be in the MVP because he was carrying the Penguins while Crosby and Malkin were not slumping, but, you know, by their standards were
Kessel was top five in scoring for a while before this whole last, you know, month and a half or so.
It's like he wasn't the MVP of his own team in the first half. And, you know, if you let whoever the Penguins play in the playoffs, if you found some obscure rule where you're like, you actually get to pick one player on the Penguins who can't play in the series, they're going to pick Crosby still. So he's not the best player on his own team. He's not, I don't know. I mean, there's the case to be made. But yeah, you're right. Like, I don't know. I still struggle with this. Like, what is most valuable? If it's just a case of, if you take this guy off the team, what happens? Then the Penguins are still pretty good without Malkin. Whereas the Avalanche or the Devils or whoever probably fall apart without their guys.
Like, yeah, that's kind of why I like the MVP. You kind of have to think about it. You just can't go, well, Nikita Kucherov has X amount of points more than this guy, so he's more valuable. Like, is he better?
You have to really, really think about it and really crunch the numbers for only the forwards.
Yeah.
While completely ignoring defensemen and goalies unless they do something.
Eric Karlsson probably should have gotten the Conn Smythe last year. How about that? How about that for a take? Eric Karlsson, whose team didn't get to the Stanley Cup final, probably deserved the Conn Smythe.
Well, you know what? I'd tell you that you're being ridiculous, but I'm sure at some point I argued that Doug Gilmour should have won the Conn Smythe in 93. So,
right.
I'm with you.
I'm just saying.
It's hard. By the way, did you see, just speaking of Eric Karlsson, I just tweeted this out. I don't know if you saw it. There was a article here in the paper in Ottawa, and it's an article about Bobby Ryan and basically how he's dealing with the fact that he was in all these trade rumors and everyone's talking about his contract. And it was kind of, I don't want to say it was a fluff piece, but it was a feature. It was kind of like, what does this do to a player's head? But then, like, just buried in it is this mention where he's like, yeah, on Sunday, Eric and I were told that we were traded to a Western Conference team, but then it fell apart.
Oh.
And he's like, we were like joking, like, we got to go pack because it's done.
And that was
it. That seems like kind of a big thing, right? Like,
it was just like a side anecdote in the story about how tough
it was. Like, it was like part of his lead, but it was kind of like, yeah, just it, like, the focus of the story wasn't, holy crap, this deal came that close to happening. It was more like crazy things you go through when you're a hockey player. But yeah, so and which is interesting to me, because every time I write anything about Eric Karlsson being traded, I hear from Senator fans telling me that this is just something that the media has made up.
Yeah, right.
Because they want ratings and they want this and that, and they're being mean to the Senators. But apparently,
well,
according to Bobby Ryan, or at least according to what he heard the day before the trade deadline, not so much.
Well, as you and I both know, that the key to getting a lot of clicks on your stories is to write about the Ottawa Senators, because when you have a fan base that just fills up the internet like the way the Ottawa Senators do. By the way, I love that the fact that they haven't traded him now has pretty much cost them 3 points in the standings, because Ottawa beat Dallas in overtime on an Eric Karlsson breakaway goal, and then last night in Florida, Eric Karlsson had a really good game, and they beat Florida in Florida. So that's 3 points they probably wouldn't have had, and they'd be 2 points, I think, closer to 31st, and that much closer to Dahlin. But hey.
Can't wait. My favorite moment is not the actual draft lottery, but immediately after, when you can go through and figure out what game screwed some team out of, like, the first overall pick or what. Like, that's my favorite. I do an article every year and it's just like twisting the knife on all these fan bases, where you're like, hey, remember you were really happy when you won this game? Yeah, if you hadn't won that game, you would have got Connor McDavid, or you would have got Austin Matthews. And my favorite one ever is the Patrick Stefan missed open net, remember, against the Oilers?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That ended up costing them Patrick Kane.
Well, so what you're saying is it worked out?
It worked out beautifully because, you know, it's terrible because, I mean, such so rough for the Oilers to have that bad luck when it comes to draft lotteries, to just miss out on something like that.
Where do you come down on this whole idea of a team can't win the draft lottery 2 years in a row? Like, I hate it. I hate the idea that like you're punished because you finished 31st and you won the draft lottery in a year where it was like Nail Yakupov was the first guy as opposed to Connor McDavid. Like,
I think they should have that rule, because the idea behind the reason we have the draft set up the way we do and the lottery and everything is to help the bad teams. So spread out the help. Like, you shouldn't be able to win. It should be, you win the lottery, you can't win it again for 2 or 3 years or whatever, because it's like giving the best draft picks to the worst teams. It's like having a soup kitchen, right? Like, you're helping out those who need the help. Well, you know, if you get your meal at a soup kitchen, you can't cut back in line in front of everyone else and get seconds. Like, no, you hold off, wait until we've helped everyone who needs it. And if you're still finishing last year after year after year, you've got bigger problems and you don't need charity from the league. You need something other than that. So yeah, this, and part of me hopes the Oilers win the lottery again, just so that we can listen to the NHL, who could have changed this years ago, go, oh, maybe we should have changed it, and then not change it again.
So there you have it. Sean says, if you're homeless for more than a year, get your crap together, because you should have figured it out by then.
That's it. That's exactly what I'm saying.
Get out of Sean's soup kitchen with your sob story about work and life, because Sean thinks you should have figured it out with the year's worth of soup kitchen that he gave you the year before.
I'm going to slop down some Nail Yakupov on your plate and you will take it and you will be happy.
The NHL, it's so funny to me, because the NHL has, like, they create their own problems where, like, okay, we have a draft lottery, and then some team wins the draft lottery 3 years in a row, and they're just like, oh, this sucks, we got to change the draft lottery rules, when, like, you just don't have a draft lottery. Just whoever finishes 31st picks first. This way, you know, the odds of a team finishing dead last 3 years in a row are probably not as good as finishing, like, 31st, 30th, 31st, or 31st, yeah, and then winning the lottery.
The tanking is what scares them. And like, you look at what's happening in the NBA, they don't
love it,
which has a better lottery system. But yeah, I don't know. There's just go to the gold plan. That would be so much better. I don't understand why they don't do that. Well, I do. I understand, because it's different and scary, and somebody somewhere would complain. But it would be so much better if we just did it based on points after elimination.
Well, the Carolina Ron Francis subprime loan owner guy thing happened kind of right after we did our podcast last week. So I basically vented on the other podcast about the whole thing. Like, to me, it's more about the coaching, I think, than the general managing. And yeah, Scott Darling stinks. But again, I don't know if you saw the Ranger game last night, but I didn't see the last three goals. But the first three goals are all these just Justin Falk's drifting in the zone. He lets Matt Zuccarello have an easy rebound goal. It's a tic-tac-toe play off a face-off. It's a deflection. The team dominates shot totals and shot metrics, but they just give up so many grade-A chances. To me, that's a coaching thing. But
yeah,
you know,
but apparently he loves the coach. Apparently the coach is safe, we're told.
You know what it is? He might just look at the numbers and be like, wow, we're out shooting teams, we're out attempting teams by this many games. It's got to be. It can't be the coach. It's got to be the talent that's not finishing and the talent that's not making saves, which you can say for – I'm not saying Ron Francis is untouchable, but I don't know.
Well,
I just,
here's how I look at it. Like, strip aside the fact that it's Ron Francis.
Okay.
Done. Greatest player in franchise history, that.
So. Was he on that list that those three guys did? I forget what they decided on. I think he made it on that list, right? He was like 97th or something.
Yes. Oh yeah, yeah. He was on there, I think. But he's just imagine he's just a GM.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
He's John Francis. He's just a guy named John Francis. Sure.
He's John Francis. He's just some guy who was, you know, hired out of, you know, he had been the assistant and for the Lightning, and he came over and he's been GM for 4 years, didn't make the playoffs at all, any of the 4 years, never made a trade of any real significance, never a player for player trade of any significance.
Mm-hmm.
Is on the road, you know, the team once again isn't going to make the playoffs this year. His big bet on a goaltender didn't work. Like, it, yeah, that's that gets GMs fired. Totally. I mean, that's what happens as a GM. And, you know, it was the reaction. There was so much reaction from like media and you know, especially media that I saw that were like aghast that this new owner would come in and do this. And, you know, grant you, doing it in the middle of the season is a little bit weird, but, you know, do you want to be ready to hit the ground running in the off season, or do you want to spend the first month of your off season interviewing candidates then? You know, like it's
yeah.
To me,
it's fair
on the merits. You know, I don't root for anyone to get fired, but yeah, I mean, what had he done in his almost four seasons on the job that would make you say this is the guy to break our now whatever 9-year playoff drought? I don't know, you know, you know, not like he had a great track record of success in front offices somewhere else, because there wasn't one. I was surprised only by the timing, the fact that it happened right in the middle of the season. But like, I had written literally the day before that happened, I had written pretty much exactly what was going to happen, that this new owner coming in might decide that, you know, you can't fire Ron Francis, so you kick him upstairs and you get a new set of eyes in. I didn't think it was going to happen the very next day, but I wasn't surprised, and I was surprised that people felt surprised, because if we're just surprised because it's Ron Francis, then that's even a better reason not to bring back these franchise legends to sit in your front office. Because if not only are they sometimes not qualified, but if you can't even fire them when they're not doing well, then I don't know.
See, I think Ron Francis screwed up by not firing Bill Peters at the beginning of the season after he got Scott Darling and it wasn't working out. Because, I mean, Bill Peters is kind of the same thing. Like, he's been there this is his fourth year, I want to say. He's been there forever. Not forever, but he's been there a long time. And
they've been there long enough to
at least warrant. Like, because if you're a GM, like, you have a certain amount of bullets in your chamber, and you fired one with the Scott Darling trade and it wasn't working, and you have one more left, and it's firing your coach. And I don't think anybody would have minded if they fired him and brought in somebody else. But the thing that I'm surprised by too in the aftermath is how quickly everyone is just so willing to get on board with the new billionaire owner's plan, even though they don't really know what it is. Like, Nick Kyprios was on whatever hockey night in Canada roundtable discussion show thing that you guys have up there, and he was just like, yeah, I'm told that he didn't like the fact that Ron Francis wasn't a critical thinker. Like, Jesus, like, you're just, I mean, like, don't get me wrong. Like, we make jokes about, or I make jokes about Eugene Melnick stealing organs. It's not like I'm not above that sort of stuff, but it's just amazing how like serious hockey insiders are so willing to just knife Ron Francis when no one said anything about Ron Francis being a bad GM up until a week ago. That's what surprises me.
Yeah. I wonder, you mentioned Bill Peters. I wonder if maybe that was part of the rift between them. If the owner loves Peter so much, I wonder if Ron Francis did try to play that card or suggest that, you know, hey, we may need to look for a new coach, and the owner says, I don't think we are. I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see who they can pull into that job, because, you know, they've got some really interesting names that they're apparently talking to. There's only 31 of these jobs in the league, so, you know, obviously guys are going to be interested, but when you've got this new owner who apparently wants to be hands-on, who apparently has already made a decision on the coach, which would normally be the GM's job, I don't know. I wonder if they get the grade A candidates, or if some people maybe even go in and interview and talk to them and then say, you know what, I'm going to hold off and wait for the Montreal job or whatever else.
Well, we're halfway home. It's that time of the show when we take a break, and then we come back, and then we'll talk about, I don't know what we're going to talk about. We'll decide when we get back. It's a big surprise. We don't even know what we're going to talk about. We could talk about maybe Blake Wheeler is the MVP of the league, but we're not going to do that. But we'll be right back.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is usually an Ottawa Senators podcast, because that's what it is. It's an Ottawa Senators podcast. We've discussed Erik Karlsson. I mentioned Eugene Melnyk and the Oregon thing already, even though it was kind of indirectly. We didn't really get into it. But let's focus on Ontario's other team, the Toronto Maple Leafs. That team is so set up to be really good in the future. And this is a thing I was just texting a friend with this morning on the way here, is I feel like Toronto is still in the honeymoon period, even though people were kind of freaking out there when they were really bad for like 5 weeks and, oh no, what's going on? And then Freddie Anderson got out and we kind of forgot about it. But this team has, this year anyway, maybe next year too, depending on what they do, they have about $8 to $9 million tied up in Patrick Marleau and Matt Martin, which feel like Lou Lamoriello guys. Like, that's, those are two guys he wants to bring in for toughness and leadership. And, you know, Patrick Marleau is going to have the worst season of his career essentially since he was a rookie. And Matt Martin has, I think the Leafs have been way better when he's been scratched. So at some point, I think you're going to want to have that $8 million to spend on stuff in the next 2 years. And you're not going to have it. And I don't know how you as a diehard Senators fan feel about this. I'm assuming you're enjoying it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I am enjoying it. It's been such a weird season for the Leafs, because they've been locked into basically finishing third in the Atlantic almost all year long. So there's been no drama around them making the playoffs, but also no drama around, like, you know, can they finish first, take the division, this sort of thing.
I've never heard a Canadian say drama before. I didn't realize that was like,
your, it weird?
That was, it's like your past is. I never picked up on that. Sorry. Go ahead.
There's so
I didn't mean to make you feel self-conscious. Say
yeah,
drama.
Now I gotta, choose all my words carefully. It's been a weird season, but like, I was looking at it, and I don't know, they lost a few games before they beat Pittsburgh, so this might not be the case anymore. But at one point, they were on pace to actually have a franchise record for points in a season, which is kind of a fake record, because we've got the loser point now and shootouts, and it's not the same as it would. But I mean, at the same time, you would think a franchise that had been around for 100 years wouldn't be setting its all-time points record in a year where they just kind of finished third and everyone's like, eh, you know, just sort of shrugs. But they might. You're right. The honeymoon is kind of still there. It's going to be, if they lose in the first round of the Bruins, that's when the honeymoon will kind of officially end, especially if they lose like in five games and everyone's like, oh wow, we really aren't as close as we think we are. So,
and like, Marleau has no goals in six games, and like, yeah, I mean, Jake Marleau, Carter gets run over.
Yeah, Marleau's been fine. I mean, he's not
killing you.
You're right. He's not killing it, but he's still okay. I mean, he's not what you were worried about when the signing first happened, which is he'd show up and you'd be like, oh, this guy's old and we've got 3 years left of him. Like, he's still got the speed. He's playing more of like a third line role. He's been okay, and he's got 2 years left after this one, but we all know the third year he's just going to disappear somewhere. Like, that, they will find a way.
Think so?
The contract is structured in such a way that he'll get like loaded into a like a meat freezer somewhere in the depths of the ACC and never heard from again, and or trade it to the Coyotes, like something like that.
Yeah,
will end up happening. Matt Martin, Martin's a bad contract, but he's a bad fourth line contract. I feel like most teams probably have something like that. What they should have done is he should have been exposed in the expansion draft. That was the mistake they made, because they ended up losing, an okay young player when they could have just exposed him.
Who did they lose again? I forget who that was.
Leipzig, the guy who just got traded to
Vancouver. Oh, right, to Vancouver. Yeah.
And is doing well in, you know, a couple of games there. But so, you know, it's been okay. But then the thing that's kind of looming over all this is the front office situation, because Lamoriello's in the last year of his deal, and nobody seems to really know what the plan is and who's going to be the GM going into the offseason. And there's been a lot of talk lately that Lamoriello is actually not necessarily in the last year of his deal, but that his deal specifies this is his last year's GM, and then he can stick around as a consultant or what have you. And who knows if he actually does, because that was what he was supposed to do in New Jersey too, when he bolted for Toronto at the first chance that he got. But the question now is, what's the succession plan, and does Brendan Shanahan already know who the next GM is? And is it Kyle Dubas, who's the young kind of analytically minded guy, or is it Mark Hunter, who's the more old school scout type of guy? And apparently both guys want the job. Apparently it's you know, it's not like one guy's happy to, let you know, be out of the spotlight. They both reportedly feel like they're ready. Dubas has his name kind of thrown around a little bit with other openings. Like, there was talk that the Avalanche wanted him last year. His name is kind of, it's been mentioned with the Hurricanes, but I don't think he's being interviewed. I don't think the Leafs are letting him interview, which suggests, and there have been reports, that he's the next GM, that's the plan. At which point, does that mean that Mark Hunter leaves? Does Hunter go somewhere else where he feels like, you know, I mean, Kyle Dubas is like, I mean, he's like 23 years old. He's going to be around for a while. So, you know, it's not like, you know, it's one thing to have to wait in line behind Lou Lamoriello. It's another thing to have to wait in line behind somebody much, much younger at the very beginning of their career. Maybe Mark Hunter goes somewhere else. Like, this is kind of the one thing where, as a Leaf fan, if you're really, like, if you're feeling that absence of stress and that absence of worry, this is where you can go to get it, because the roster looks good. It's young. The stars are pretty much all locked in. The coaching is all set for the next 5 years with Babcock. It's that front office, and that things seem like they're working well, but it's not out of the question that a few months from now, Lou Lamoriello will be either gone or at least not a GM anymore. Mark Hunter could be gone. And now the whole show is being run by this very, very smart up and coming front office guy who has no direct hands-on experience and suddenly doesn't have all these veteran voices around him.
How hard could it be, though? I mean, like, if, like, Kyle Dubas, yeah, he was the GM of an OHL team, right? So, I mean, how much different, yeah, could it be? You sit in a chair.
How hard could it be to be an NHL GM?
It's like, probably, I mean, easy.
You don't make trades.
Right.
You don't sign offer sheets.
You go golf for 2 days in Florida a couple times a year with your buddies.
Yeah, and vote to keep the loser point and not to change any rules at all.
By the way, how about
walk into a meeting, you thumbs up to everything, you walk out, you make five terrible decisions on July 1st, and you're all set.
And you're all set for August. You head out to Alberta, you go to your ranch, and you put your feet up, and you just sip some cool drinks, and then you come back and you do it all over again the next year. It's a beautiful job.
It's going to be interesting to see how that plays in Toronto, because it's funny, because on the one hand, if you were a fan of any other team and you had an opening for your GM, or you didn't like your current GM, Kyle Dubas is exactly the sort of guy you'd want to be on your team's radar. You know, young guy, fresh thinker, you know, understands the modern game, all this stuff. You'd be like, put that guy on the top of the list. But when it's your team, moving him up, you're suddenly kind of like, geez, I don't know.
I know, right?
But, you know, and the other thing, and this is unfair because this has absolutely nothing to do with Kyle Dubas, but the Leafs did go down this, let's bring in the young, bright mind without a lot of experience road years ago with John Ferguson, and that didn't work out very well. And you wonder if that kind of hangs over things. And since then it's been Brian Burke. And then, I mean, there was Nonis for a few years and then over to Lamoriello. So I don't know. You wonder if the fans are going to be nervous about it. I think it's still the honeymoon period. So I think fans would be absolutely fine with however this works out, but suddenly it becomes, okay, if some of these moves start getting made, because they have some tough decisions to make this offseason. It'll be interesting to see if Toronto can kind of just stay cool here and enjoy that you've got a pretty well-run thing happening, or whether our natural instinct to just panic and overreact to everything kicks in and has us losing our minds over this front office switch that presumably is coming.
One of the things, or actually the thing that surprised me the most in the NHLPA player poll thing was not that, like, you know, players value grit and hard work over actual talent and all that stuff. I was surprised.
Well, they didn't have, talent wasn't on the list of things they could choose from.
Was it not on the list, or was it like one of the options that was just like, you know,
maybe
below the top five? Yeah. But the fact that like 80% of players love the playoff format blows my mind, man. Like, it absolutely... Well,
the point format, I think it was.
Was it the point format or was it the playoff format?
It was the way that the point, the basically the loser point, they had...
Oh, you're right.
It was 80%, which that didn't surprise me because it's the same as the GM. Like, who wouldn't want Magic loser point fairy to show up and, you know, like... Hey, you guys have lost four in a row. Well, yeah, we have, but we got 2 points in the process, so you can't bag skate us too much. I would expect. I was surprised that 20% of players have figured out that the loser point is garbage and were willing to say that.
Huh. Well, that hurts my segue into the whole bad playoff format thing. That's going to screw your
league. Pretend that they also like the.
They probably do. They like. I feel like players don't think that deeply about stuff like that. They just play, and whoever's in front of them, they play. So they don't really care.
And they're going to be fine with, you know, until it directly. They're like everyone in the NHL. Unless it directly hurts your team,
right?
You don't care. Nobody has any sort of forward thinking about like what's best for the league as a whole. It's just
like there's hockey leagues out there now that are like, you know what, if you win your conference, you can pick whoever you want to play. And in the NHL, it's like, well, if you have the third most points, guess what, you might play the team with the second most points in the first round. And everyone's just like, sure, division rivalry, whatever. Yeah. Who cares? It's so I think it's bad for fans too, because it's bad for teams, because honestly, the Capitals probably get out of the second round at some point if they don't have to face the best team. You know what I mean? Like, they kept running into the Penguins in the second round the last couple of years when they probably shouldn't have. And now Toronto, like, if they lose to Boston, which I don't think is a for sure thing at all, whether Boston's healthy or not, like, that's going to I want Toronto's hangover or honeymoon to end on the right terms. I want them to get like bounced in like the second round by a beatable team, and then they lose that series in five. I don't want them to lose to a team that's slightly better than them when they shouldn't play them yet. Like, that's unfair.
You know what? It is unfair, but I got to be honest. It doesn't bother me as much as it does other people, and maybe it should, because this year, you know, it the Leafs are the team that's going to potentially lose out because of this. In other years, it's been other teams.
And Tampa, too. Tampa's going to have to play a team before they should. Tampa's going to play the worst team in the East, and they're going to play the second-best team in the East in the second round.
Here's the thing. Here's why it doesn't bother me as much. There's so much parity. There's so much... Like, I know we always get into this, well, you know, the second-best team in the conference is going to have to play the third-best team, and meanwhile, the fourth-best team is only going to have to play the seventh-best team. And yeah, that doesn't make sense when you phrase it like that, but we're... The difference between those teams is so slim that, and ultimately, and I know it does matter. Look, if you're going out in the first round versus going out in the second round, that does matter. It's experience, it's revenue for the team, it's fun for the fans, it's being taken away from you. But ultimately, the goal is to win the Stanley Cup. You got to go through all these teams to get there.
No, you don't have to. That's the thing, is that those teams...
Or similar, or you either got to go through these teams or teams that were good enough to beat those teams.
Like, would you rather play Boston or Philly in the first round? Come on.
I'd rather play Philly. Right. But if you're going to win the Stanley Cup at some point, you know, you're going to go through Boston, or you're going to go through Tampa, or you're going to go through Pittsburgh or Washington. Like, there's so many... It's not like the old days where... The best team had 120 points, and meanwhile, there was a team with like 65 sneaking into the playoffs. It's everybody's so close. And, you know, I liked what the league tried to do going to the division format.
It was a good thought. I was kind of on board with
the rivalries. Yeah. It hasn't really worked for two reasons. And, you know, one of which we probably should have seen coming, and maybe the other one we couldn't have. But reason number one is that rivalries just aren't good anymore. There's you know, a Norris division rivalry in 1991 was a rivalry, you know, like that was like, yeah, give me Blues and Blackhawks, give me Leafs and Red Wings, like hook it into my veins, let's go. That was great. Give it to me every year, because the teams hated each other and it was a gong show.
Are you saying that's not as good as Florida Toronto? Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, it's I mean, what even is the best rivalry?
I don't know. Well, I don't know. What's on NBC tomorrow?
Yeah, that's right.
Whatever that game is.
Yeah, exactly. It's Carolina, Nashville,
Boston, Washington.
But then the other problem, in addition to rivalries not really being as good, is that there is a difference between, you know, it was one thing when there were five teams in a division and four of them play each other every year. With eight teams in a division, there's the number of combinations is so much,
right?
Which is so much more that you don't get necessarily the same kind of, it's the same teams facing each other every year. Cause that, you know, that is what builds a rivalry. That's what, and rivalries in hockey are great, but I'm just not sure that they can be what they used to be. So maybe it doesn't make sense to keep trying to force them. Maybe it makes sense to go to 1-8. But here's the thing. You go to 1-8 in the conferences, you're still going to get screwed up playoff matchups compared to just going 1-16.
Like the Southeast would always screw it up because like Florida won their division with like 84 points. Like I know. It's
always been screwed up through history. There is, you can go through the entire history of the NHL. The playoffs have never been fair. They have never been, even when there were only four teams in the playoffs, which you'd think would be impossible to screw up. Like how hard is that? 1-4, 2-3.
Five and six in the final.
That's not what they did. They went 1-3 and 2-4. Why? Nobody knows.
It's the NHL.
But they did, you know? Then they expanded and they added six more teams and they put all those six expansion teams in the same division so that one of them got a guaranteed trip to the Stanley Cup. It's been, you know, other than the couple of years where they actually did 1-16 in like the late 70s, early 80s, they actually had that. But then you do that and everybody complains about the travel and the time zones and this and that.
So travel,
you know, my feeling is it's never going to be perfect. It's never going to be even satisfactory. Everybody's so close. The 16 teams that make the playoffs are almost always, I mean, if you finish as the number one seed, you get a wild card team. So you're not going to have to play a super great team. Other than that, you know, we're talking a few points different between everybody. Like is Boston that, you know, so Toronto would be playing who, like Pittsburgh instead, maybe. Philadelphia's been on fire the second half. Is the difference between Philadelphia and Boston really that big?
Yes, I think so. I'd rather spend six games shooting on Peter Mrazek than six games shooting on Tuukka Rask. But that's, I'd rather go out against Andrew McDonald for 20 minutes than Zdeno Chara and Charlie McAvoy. Well, but
put it this way, right now, if the playoffs started and we had a 1-8, the Leafs would be playing Philadelphia instead of Boston. Maybe that's the big jump where you say that's a big difference. But Washington wins their next game, they move ahead of Toronto, and then Toronto will be playing Pittsburgh. So is that, would you rather play Pittsburgh or would you rather play Boston? Now we're into the, you know, it's at the end of the day, you want to win the Stanley Cup. You got to go through all these teams. Maybe getting a slightly easier first round matchup is better. Sure. And you know, that's not nothing. Like I say, losing, if you lose in the first round, it, you know, but nobody's losing a Stanley Cup because of this playoff format. At the end of the day, you got to get to where you got to get to. It doesn't bother me as much as it bothers a lot of people.
See, it's because you're a Leafs fan. You haven't had the heartbreak yet. You've been out of the playoffs for so long that you've forgotten what it's like to get screwed. I think you'll change your tune if Boston somehow beats Tampa, or Tampa beats Toronto in the first round. But I hear you. What's your ideal format like? Would you keep this? Would you go 1-8? Would you go 1-16 if you could? Or,
you know what? I think at this point, I mean 1-16. I don't think it works because I don't think it works because of the travel, and not even just because of the travel, but because of the complaining about the travel. Because what you'd have is, you know, some team, Washington, finishes as the 2 seed, but they end up having to play San Jose, and then they win that series, but they lose in the second round, and they're going to be like, well, we were tired because of the travel. It'll just become the new excuse. And
tough. I don't care.
Here's what I would like. I'm at the point now where I was good with the current format. I'm still good with it. If people feel strongly they want to go to 1-8 in the conference, fine. I don't feel like that's a major improvement, but I'd be fine with that. The one thing I would like is, do whatever you do, when you get to the Final Four, you reseed, and we can go cross-conference if we need to, which means we can have a Stanley Cup final with two teams from the same conference if that's the way it works out.
Okay. That's
so,
fair. I like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I, you know.
That and, was going to be the divisional thing, too, was when we got to the third round, they were gonna reseed, but then they voted against that because, God yeah. forbid, this league
ever
be fun.
Maybe the best scenario is do 1-8 and then reseed when you get to the Final Four, which means you can have crossovers, which means, in theory, it would even be possible to have two teams in the same division playing for the Stanley Cup, which means you could have Pittsburgh-Washington in the Stanley Cup final, or Toronto-Montreal, or, you know, whatever, pick your, you know, your two Edmonton-Calgary, whatever your rivalry, you'd at least have a shot that those two teams could play in the final. And I know that, you know, they, well, what if it's two California teams? What if it's two teams? Well, what if it is, you know?
Be cool. Be great.
Yeah, great. It's not like, I mean, it's not like you're going to start every game at 11 o'clock at night. You're still going to force them into a
right
Eastern friendly start time. So that's how I would like to see it done, because there's no, like, the NHL isn't Major League Baseball, where there's an American League and or the NFL, where you got AFC, NFC, and there's some history as to why those are two different things. It the NHL, it's just geography. Mm-hmm. So why not, you know, and if you're, yeah, maybe you get two California teams, or maybe you get two, you know, Vancouver and Edmonton, and everyone's like, oh, that's terrible rating. But maybe you get Pittsburgh and the Rangers, or maybe you get, you know, some fantastic matchup that's going to do killer ratings that you wouldn't otherwise get. And at least you'd have a chance at a final where there's some history between the two teams, instead of the kind of like Pittsburgh, San Jose, Pittsburgh, Nashville matchups where there's really nothing to go on at all. So that's my ideal format.
I like it. I'm on board.
Done. Motion carried.
Bottom of the West. Let's do this real quick. The last four teams in are San Jose 83, LA 81, Dallas 82 in the wild card, Colorado 80. All those teams have played 69 except for Colorado, which has played 68. And then you have Anaheim at 80 on the outside looking in, St. Louis 79, Calgary 78. Let's play a little Price is Right. Would you remove any of those bottom four teams for one of those three teams that aren't in the playoffs right now?
Am I making my prediction, or
your prediction?
Is this like what I would like to see?
Give me both. We'll do some mailbags.
I actually did what I would like to see. My piece on Sportsnet today was my ideal playoff, where I took not just the opening, all four rounds, the ideal matchup that we could realistically get in every single one of those rounds. Because right now, with a couple of tweaks, like, there are some amazing possibilities. Like, we could have a really incredible playoff this year, just in terms of the matchups. But I had one of them was I slipped Calgary in there instead of Dallas. So Dallas fans are mad at me now. So I'm going to leave Dallas in for my prediction. I'm going to take Calgary out. Who would I, prediction-wise, man.
Calgary is the bottom team in this group, and they're five points behind San Jose.
And they, I mean, that was such a tough loss to take against the Islanders on Sunday. You know, a team comes in that's lost eight in a row. You're on home ice. You got your starting goaltender back. The other team's starting a guy who's played like six games in his life. And you lose. You give up two goals in the first 2 minutes and you lose. That feels like that's the sort of loss that sometimes can break a team. The crazy one is St. Louis still being in this.
Just hanging around. Just hanging around.
They basically gave up at the deadline. not just trading Stastny, but they shut down Jay Bomeister. They're going right down the checklist of things teams do when they're done, and yet they're hanging right in there. And I mean, it would be kind of fun to see them slip in, maybe even wind up going up against Winnipeg at some point. But I'm gonna say,
Colorado, set? Anaheim. Yeah, that's what I think too. I don't know, man.
Colorado's got the two games in hand. And they've got the other thing with Anaheim that really stands out is they don't the ROW tiebreaker, the overtime and regulation wins, they're way behind everyone.
Yeah.
So when you say the Anaheim's 2 points back, they're really 3 points back, because they're not going to win any of the tiebreakers. And yet at the same time, Colorado is Colorado, and I still don't trust them.
Like, Colorado could rip off like 7 losses in a row, and I wouldn't be surprised. But
no.
I think we might be set. Like, I don't think San Jose or LA is going to really fall.
That's usually what happens, right? I mean, we sit there and look at who's going to move here or there, and then nobody moves, and it ends up being pretty much what we thought it was going to be.
Hope Colorado gets
in. I just want to check.
Nathan MacKinnon gets
in. I just want to check and see. I want to see if do Colorado and Anaheim play each other the rest of the way.
I want to say that they don't.
They do. They've got one game April 1st, fourth last game of the season, at least for Anaheim. So
where's it at Anaheim?
It's at Anaheim. Anaheim's schedule isn't too. They've got 3 at home, then they go on the road, but that's
3 of their last 4 are at home.
But it's, yeah, they're on the road for 4, but it's the Canadian trip, so you've got the Jets are tough, but the rest are iffy. Kings, Avalanche, Wild, Stars, they play in a 4-game stretch at the end of the year, all at home. But I mean, that's kind of your make or break right there. All right, push comes to shove, I'm going to say Anaheim steals the last spot.
I'll take Colorado because I'm tired of Nathan MacKinnon people yelling at me. So there, I picked Colorado to make the playoffs. Therefore, Nathan MacKinnon's probably going to get the Hart Trophy. So leave me alone.
Joe Sakic, GM of the year.
I mean, he pulled off the deal that got rid of Matt Duchene and brought back, Sam Girard.
And by the way, can we also just point out with Calgary, and this kind of links into that loss to the Islanders, they don't have their own first round pick. The Islanders have the Flames first round pick, and it's not lottery protected.
Mm-hmm.
Which I know you're talking like 1 or 2% odds, but
that'd be funny.
You talk about the nightmare scenario.
I love how you just sit around all day thinking about nightmare lottery draft scenarios. Yeah. That's all you do.
That's right. What is the worst thing that could happen to this Brian Burke controlled team when it comes to the draft pick they traded away?
You're like sitting there just staring off into space, and your wife's like, Sean, what are you thinking right now? And like in your brain, it's just like, well, 2.4% if they were to win the lottery. About our life together or something. Yeah, mm-hmm. Whatever, sure. Let's do some questions and then get the heck out of here. There's one right off the bat we should do. It's from M-E, capital M, capital E. So this could be the state of Maine. I'm not sure. The question is, can you sigh less and make your podcast less depressing to listen to? No, I don't think so.
I mean, we could try, but we'd probably fail.
It would be futile, right? Like, what's the point? What is the point of even trying to be positive, you know? We're all going to die someday. Anyway, thanks for the question. Oh, God. I'm just so exhausted now.
You want to do any more questions?
I mean, I don't even know if I want to just go home anymore. I might just lay down here in the studio and just take a nap until I feel better. Hockey is just the worst. Yako Rutsu says, if Ken Holland goes to Seattle, how many no trade clauses and no move clauses will they have after a year? 6 or more? Man, I come back to this a lot. Like, I understand people hate what Ken Holland kind of did towards the end, but my God, the man has 4 Stanley Cups, right? 4.
He's got 4 Stanley
four.
Cups.
4. And like we can't do a mailbag. Is it 3?
But I guess didn't he come in halfway through when they won the back-to-backs?
I thought he had 4. Either way, he's got 3 or 4. And every time we do a mailbag, it's like how can we get Ken Holland deported back to Canada? Like really?
Winning, like being a GM who won the Stanley Cup in 2002 in the NHL is like being a GM who won like a Premier League soccer title. Like it's nice, good job, nice ring, totally different league. I don't think it tells you anything now. Ken Holland. Boy, Red Wing fans would love that because he'd probably like grab all those guys. He'd be like, I want Franzen. Let's work out a deal to bring him over.
Thomas Dahlin wants to know, when is the earliest the team should pull their goalie for an extra attacker when down 1 or down 2? Of all the things Patrick Waugh did in Colorado that were bad, the one thing he was good at was knowing when to pull his goalie. He'd do it with 3 minutes if they were down 1, if he had the right matchup on the ice. And
people are starting to do that. Like, because this is the thing, like the math guys, I think, went to work on this and they figured out that it's whatever the number is, it's much earlier than we thought. Like, it used to be 1 minute was kind of the, maybe a minute and a half if you were two goals.
Yeah, it's got to be two, at least two if you're down.
It's more like two, and if you're down two goals, like even three or four, and which we've seen some teams do, like every now and then you're, like I think like Pittsburgh against the Leafs on Saturday when they were down 4-2, they pulled their goalie with like 3 minutes left, and then they threw Malkin Crosby-Kessel out as a line. And it was terrifying.
It's like, good luck.
Like, it was, it, they didn't score, but it was, I mean, it was like the Globetrotters, and you're just sitting there waiting for them to, and then they called timeout so that they could throw them out again. And they played most of the last 3 minutes, and it was, that was scary.
You know what teams need to do more of is when they're down two, this is such a, like a unique situation. It rarely happens, but if it's, if you're down two goals with like 4 or 5 minutes to go and you somehow wind up at 4-on-4, pull your goalie and have a power play, because you're probably going to lose the game anyway at that point. But if you give yourself a 5-on-4 where the other team can't ice the puck for 2 minutes, like, yeah, maybe they get an empty netter and it's over, but that might happen anyway with 3 minutes to go or 2 minutes to go. I saw Lindy Ruff do it once. I think Dallas was down three with like 10 minutes to go in the game, and they had a 4-on-4, and they were like, screw it, let's just pull the goalie. And I'm pretty sure they scored on the power play too. So that's my one thing.
That's it. That's the thing. It has to work the first time a coach does it, because if they get scored on and then everyone says, why'd you do that? And then it never happens again. But yeah, no, some of these guys have been, I think Dallas Eakins used to pull the goalie pretty early too when he was in Edmonton. I think people are getting used to that. This is kind of like the NHL equivalent to NFL coaches needing to go for it more on fourth down. Like,
right,
they're just slowly but surely figuring out that they can do it.
And now that Doug Peterson won a Super Bowl doing it, basically, now every team next year is never going to punt. There'll be no punting anymore in the NFL because one guy beat the Patriots one time in a game. We got any more questions that we should do? Did you see any that you liked?
Yeah, I did see one that I liked, and then I scrolled off of it. So
that's what I just did. That's why I asked you.
here's the one. Corey Hirsch asks, in an elimination style shootout between all NHL coaches, who would be the last one to score?
Oh, with the coach, I mean Ken Hitchcock, right? I mean,
so that was my first thought. I mean, you eliminate obviously all the guys who have played recently. You know, like I'm pretty sure this would be the one thing that Doug Weight would be.
Who's playing goalie? Is it just like a league average goaltender? I guess it doesn't matter, right?
I'm gonna say Garth Snow is playing goalie on this one.
I mean, it would have to.
Yeah, like if Phil Housley's gonna be okay. Hitchcock would be iffy. Boudreaux.
Yeah, Bruce Boudreaux probably be. Those would be the last two guys on the ice. Like 7 hours later, trying to score a goal. Let us go home. We'll call it a tie.
I don't know. Travis Green couldn't score in breakaways when he was playing, so I don't know. He might be.
I can't picture John Hines. Like, I don't know. I've never actually watched. Like, you know how, like, if you go watch a practice, you can watch the coach skate around and get a feel for his quickness.
Yeah.
I've never done that.
They could all skate, but yeah, I'm trying to picture, like, do they have Paul Maurice coming in and, like, going. I could see Tortorella having a tough. I could see him, like, hitting the post on the first one and then just smashing his stick and flipping goals over.
All right. Well, that was the podcast for today, for this week. I don't know what I'm going to write about for Vice Sports this week. I already wrote a thing about Grayson Allen because they let me write about non-hockey stuff once in a while. It's fun. And I hate Grayson Allen, and I hope Duke loses, and I hope Grayson Allen fouls out because he takes 6 charges that end up becoming blocks because he positioned himself wrong.
This is absolutely true. I saw you linked to that so many times, and I don't follow college basketball. I had no idea.
I know.
In fact, I didn't even know he was a basketball player. I couldn't figure out who this guy you were talking about was. And I finally clicked on it, and I was like, oh, college basketball. I don't know any college basketballs. And I scrolled down, and I saw the picture, and I'm like, oh, it's the guy who looks like Ted Cruz.
Yes.
I hate that guy.
Yes, right.
Like, I hated that guy for years, and I was so excited that I was like now on board your little hate train.
I've definitely over retweeted that early this week, but it's college basketball. I feel like no one follows me for college basketball, so like I kind of have to overdo it as opposed to the hockey stuff. But sorry about that if you've seen it too much.
College, but anything you're any content that you're putting out right now that is not a fake tournament, like
I know
the March Madness of sandwiches. Like people should just be so grateful that if it's it doesn't involve a bracket, just be happy.
Once we get the 64 episodes, we can have somebody do the 64 episodes of Biscuits, and then that'll be the bracket next year. Yeah. What do you? Any, you want to sell anything else? You've already worked on the sports.
Well, speaking of brackets, I've got my, like I say, my perfect NHL playoffs that I wanted to do now, because I know every time I get excited about a playoff matchup in the NHL, it ends up getting screwed up at the last minute. So check that out on Sportsnet, just because you can get mad at me, because not only do I have the 16 best teams to make the playoffs, but I've then got the winner of each round all the way to the Stanley Cup final. So you can like follow along until I eliminate your team from the playoffs, and then go on Twitter and yell at me for thinking some other team would be a better choice to go on to the third round or whatever.
So in a way, you did do brackets this week after saying nobody should do brackets.
I absolutely did. But I didn't like, I should have. That would imagine like a March Madness of hockey teams. 16 teams. And we just play them in, except without the stupid play-in game for whatever.
All right, go to iTunes and maybe. So right now we have 317 ratings. We're a 5-star podcast. We don't even have the little half star for the last one. So maybe if we get up to like 400, maybe we'll do like an entire episode of Biscuits before the playoffs or during the playoffs where we're just positive, 100% positive podcast. But like, we need some incentive. I need the carrot in front of me to be positive, because already right now I've been talking about being positive for like 15 seconds and I'm exhausted. So maybe think about doing that, and we'll think about being positive.
Wow.
And yeah, that's it for me. So thanks for listening, and I guess we'll see you next week, like we always do.
Right on.
Bye.
Bye-bye.